Timeless Voyager Radio. Self-development radio for the open mind. Interviews with leading-edge authors and speakers, psychic phenomena and the unexplained, UFOs, extraterrestrial encounters, government cover-ups, alternative healthcare, new technologies. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes for Timeless Voyager Radio.
Hello everyone, Bruce Stephen Holmes for Timeless Voyager Radio. My guest today is Peter Close. He is a noted British medium. You know, after 32 years on the London police force as a bobby, we don't use the term bobby here, we use other terms. Anyway, Peter Close yielded to his inner urgings to develop his clairvoyant abilities. One of Great Britain's most gifted and devoted spiritualist mediums, he trained his gift at the Spiritualist Association of Great Britain in London. We're going to learn all about this. He travels the United Kingdom, giving lectures and demonstrations. And also he does this in the U.S., this being his 14th year in Southern California and other U.S. cities, demonstrating his gift to audiences and also appearing on radio and television. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you, Bruce.
Okay, we've welcomed each other here.
Yeah. No, but you know.
You know, it's kind of interesting when I go through reading something like this. It says, for example, that you trained yourself in the gift of mediumship. What does
well,
that mean?
I didn't actually train myself. I attended classes over the period of 7 years altogether.
Did you do this while you were...
While I was a policeman, yes.
I'm going to say a cop.
A cop, yeah.
Well, a bobby.
We call ourselves a cop. It's just tourists that
now,
call
why
us
do they
bobby.
Use... Oh, really?
Yeah.
So in other words, the
it's
term...
It's just a nickname. It came in when the police force was first founded. It was founded by a guy called Sir Robert Peel. And we were named after him, Robert, as Bobby, you
oh.
see. And they were called, the police at that time were just called Bobbies by the general public. And, of course, tourists are what keep it alive now.
So you refer
the
to yourselves
the average policeman
as...
call you a cop. The average person in the street okay. call you a cop, just like anywhere else.
All right, so we'll use the term police person. We have to say that in the U.S. now, police person.
Oh, you do.
Okay, so I was asking you a question. So you were interested in the idea of clairvoyance, or
Well, actually, when I first came across it, I was in my 40s. I'd been in the police force for about 20 years at the time, and I had an emotional sort of breakdown, and I found it hard to concentrate on things, and I sort of met some people one in a bar one night in West London. And as a result, we sort of met a couple more nights, and then we met again on the Saturday in Hyde Park in central London, and it started to rain, as it often does there. And we sort of got in a cab, and I didn't know where we were going, but we ended up in Belgrave Square, which is an area where a lot of embassies are. And we stopped outside number 33, and then when I got out, I saw the notice on the door which said Spiritualist Association of Great Britain. Well, being the hard-nosed cop I was, I said, no way are you going to get me in there. But they did, and because it was raining, and it meant leaving on my own if I didn't go with them. So I went in and sat in an audience, and the medium picked me out of all the lot. She spoke to about 10 people, and I was one, and she described my paternal grandfather to me, who had been dead quite a few years, and then told me about a motorcycle accident I'd had, and she described it in detail and where it had been and how near to death I'd come on it, and that rather alarmed me. So
this was really your first...
That was my first introduction to it, but I got curious after that and started to go more and more, and I tried to explain it away as mind reading, but things came up that no way could be mind reading, because I didn't even know them. I had to usually check them out with my parents at the time. But
Now that's an interesting point. Let me interrupt you for a second. You just made a distinction between mind reading and mediumship.
Well, that's why, being a policeman, I tried to explain it away as mind reading. I kept saying the reading my mind, you know. I was very skeptical, terribly skeptical. It took me a long time to fully accept it. And it was only because they gave me things that could never have been in my mind that I began to say, well, there's something in it. This was before I ever saw spirit myself. But after I'd been going about 3 months, and wherever I went, I was always picked out. I was always one that was so-called random. I got picked out by different mediums every time I went to a meeting. And eventually one told me it was time I was developing. And I said, developing what? I've never seen or heard anything in my life. And they said, well, when you were a child, you did. And I said, well, it's news to me. But I called my mother up, and she lived about 400 miles from me, and she was getting alarmed by this time because I was talking about all these things. And I sort of said to her, I've been told I used to see spirit when I was a child. And she said, well, you used to have imaginary playmates that we used to talk about, one particular one called David, and you used to disregard us entirely. If he told you to do something, you'd obey him and ignore us. But she said, we could put that down to you know, your imagination. But she says, the worst thing was to us was the fact that you described this lady that used to come in and see you after you went to bed.
And we're learning a little bit about the background. It's always nice sometimes to talk to someone and find out that, hey, we're all ordinary people, but we can develop these extraordinary gifts, I guess, if we wish to.
I agree with that. Well, I think everybody is psychic. It's another sense. Mediumship is a little bit more advanced than just being psychic. You have to be a psychic to be a medium, but you don't necessarily have to be a medium to be a psychic.
Let's go back to this older woman.
Anyway, I used to keep telling them little bits about what she told me and about herself, and I described her little bits, and they were getting a little bit wary about it all. And then one day I gave me her name, and I told them what it was, and they got alarmed because this was my grandmother who died 7 years before I was born. And my mother at that time was very, very quite religious person, you know. She belonged to the Church of England,
she didn't like the idea.
She thought the devil had got me or something. And they started punishing me, and I suppose I drove it into the background, you know, blocked it out.
Punishment for seeing spirit.
She just says it was all wrong.
Actually, well, you used the word spirit.
This was back in the 30s, you know, and I lived in rural England, and that sort of thing wasn't as accepted as it is today.
All right. Let's talk a little bit then. What is a medium in your estimation?
Well, a medium is someone who in some way or another channels spirit. Whether this is on a mental level or in a trance level, or in some ways, as the old days, you used to have the physical mediums who used to, you don't get them very much today, who used to go completely out, and sometimes they were blindfolded and gagged and tied to seats and put in cabinets and all those sort of things, and an ectoplasm used to come out from chakras of their body, and spirits used to materialize in them.
These were pretty developed people.
These were things that used to happen a lot going back to the early days of spiritualism, but unfortunately it's gone underground a lot now. You don't get much of it. What there is are usually very private organizations that don't invite outsiders in too much. But most of the mediumship you get today is either in the trance form or is a mental way. Right.
Now, how about your what
most
would you
of my work is mental. I'm completely aware of everything
So they use the term, I've heard this term, conscious channel.
A conscious channel, yes. And I sort of link up with spirit. I have three sort of abilities: the clairvoyant ability, the clairaudience, which means I can hear too, and clairsentience, which means I sense a lot and feel. I pick up their feelings.
Right, be regarded as a psychometrist then?
Well, I can do psychometry because that's slightly different.
You can do psychometry.
Is just reading, reading something that belongs to someone, and you're reading their aura. In actual fact, you're reading their auric field because when you wear something regularly or carry something regularly, it picks up part of your aura, and the vibrations on it are same as what are around you. But I sense the spirit. I suppose I psychometrize the spirit, really. I feel the spirit.
Now, I've in interviewing and speaking with various mediums and quote-unquote psychics, one of the things that I've gleaned from this interviewing process is that you generally work with guides, your own guides that I guess deliver the information that you need. Is that a good understanding of that, or is there more to that?
We work with guides or spirit helpers, whatever you want to call them. I think we misuse the word guide, because every person who walks the earth has a guide. It's usually maybe what the Orthodox Church would call your guardian angel.
Okay.
And that guide sort of protects you through life and tries to steer you through life. But
now, do you have more than one?
Addition to that is that when you start to do psychic work or you do any sort of spiritual work, you will pick up a lot of other entities or other spirits.
So that's the answer to the question.
And
you can have more than one.
You can have a lot more than one when you work on them. Most people, definitely everybody has one person, but you can pick up a lot. You can pick up teachers. You can pick up healing guides. You can pick up people who help you with the clairvoyance. I've even got a clown who just helps me to bring humor into meetings.
I must have a heck of a clown on my side.
He's my favorite. I think anybody who works in communications and that sort of thing get a lot of help from the spirit world, whether they realize it or not.
So I've got a bunch of clowns around me.
Very likely.
What is the spiritualist church? Let's talk a little bit about the spiritualist. Let's talk about, first of all, the Spiritualist Association of Great Britain.
Well, that's just one branch of the Spiritualist Church. In England, the Spiritualist Church is divided into three organizations. The Spiritualist National Union, which is the biggest. The Greater World Christian Spiritualist Organization, which is possibly the second. And the Spiritualist Association, which is the third, really the smallest of the three organizations, and yet it's quite big in London itself, because it's sort of based in London and it's centralized there. And it has a big headquarters in Belgrave Square, with two big meeting halls there and a lot of rooms for different seances and readings, private consultations, and also a healing section on the top floor. And that's open every day of the week. And they have demonstrations twice a day, clairvoyant demonstrations that anybody can walk in to see.
Now, a clairvoyant demonstration would be
which
what?
Means projecting. It's actually a mediumship demonstration. It means that you go in there and a medium is on the platform for about an hour, and will pick on randomly various people in the audience and bring back people that are so-called dead people back to them. You know, their mothers, their fathers, their grandmothers, their sisters, whoever.
Now, we're talking mostly about people, though, residing, let's say, in the, I don't want to say the lower astral, but certainly someplace in the astral.
Not necessarily. Okay. They're somewhere in the astral, but there again, every spirit's somewhere in the astral.
Well,
the higher ones.
My understanding is that...
You see, the Spiritualist Church is based largely, the belief system of the Spiritualist Church is based on the fact that they prove survival. They prove that life continues.
Sure.
Every church believes it, but Spiritualism claims they're the only church that goes to prove it.
Okay.
And that is basically what a medium's purpose is.
In other words, the Christians say that there's life after death, but that's all we need to know.
You've got to believe it.
Beyond that, tough.
You've got to accept it, whereas we sort of have to try.
Not that spiritualists aren't Christians. As a matter of fact, maybe we should
quite a lot of them are. Most of them are Christians.
Yeah, I was going to say we should be careful.
We don't close the churches to any other domination. I mean, I know some Muslims and I know a lot of Jews who actually go to spiritualist churches and they don't accept Christianity as such. But basically, as I said, there were three organizations. The Greater World Christian Spiritualist Church just catered to Christians
only.
All right. But the other two are open to anybody. The purpose of the medium is to prove survival, and that is basically when you're working a church, that's what you do. You bring back people who can prove beyond a doubt that they are their fathers, their mothers, their grandmothers, and bring information about their life and how things are going.
Sure, but as I've said many times on my show, I always say this, just because they're dead doesn't mean that they know any more than...
Oh, it doesn't mean to say they know any more. I've often said to people, if your mother couldn't balance the household budget, don't ask her what stocks and shares
to
buy.
Right, obviously. Right.
Because she hasn't suddenly become the wisest person in the world. But if you've got an emotional problem, your mother might be able to deal with it.
That's good. So the purpose of let's get this. So what is the purpose of contacting...
Well, the purpose is in case, you see... People, when they're bereaved, often find it very hard to accept it. Some go on for long, long times mourning. And I feel that basically when you can prove and bring these people back to them, it does help them a great deal.
Okay.
Usually it helps them to come to terms with it. And often, you know, parents go over into the spirit world, leaving lots of guilt complexes behind.
Yeah. Maybe we should use this instead of psychology.
They come back realizing that they want to redeem themselves. They have to try to untie them, and they try to unravel some of the problems they left behind on Earth. They do try to help their family with things that are going to happen in the future and all that sort of things, particularly if it's not so elaborate. And they, but... Basically, that's a beginning, because when people get more and more involved in it, they want to know a little bit more than just what grandma's telling them and that sort of thing. But we always call demonstrations of clairvoyance as being the shop window of the movement, as though that's what attracts people in the first instance.
So then you go in, it's then kind of like the hook, and then you're in. you're in, and then they open up the back room and show you the really expensive items.
Some people never get beyond that part, I'm afraid.
Okay, now that's a good point. Let's dwell on that for a second. Because if there's ever any issues that come up in any of the so-called... let's call them esoteric organizations, the esoteric teachings, is they always pretty much play down any of the mediumship. And, of course, what my understanding of that is that they feel that the mediumship can be a trap.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't agree with that. Mediumship...
Well, I wouldn't expect you to agree with it. I wanted you not to agree with it. Otherwise, you wouldn't be a medium, would you?
Which esoteric organizations say this?
Well, all right.
I know the Orthodox Church would say so.
No. If you're reading, for example, the Vedic scriptures, they'll say that, sure, that certainly channeling and all this is important, but that the person who is channeling can spend all their time... I don't want to use the term wasting energy, but using energy in service to others that could be used for their own growth purposes.
Well,
all right. No.
I think each individual person is... That is my work. It's not necessarily my own spiritual growth. I sort of do my own...
So you have a separate...
That's a separate thing. This is my work. And it's a necessity, because a lot of people wouldn't get even on the first rung of the ladder if there weren't mediums and psychics about.
Now, Edgar Cayce, of course, was one of the people who mentioned many times that people around him certainly said that he needed to stop doing some of these readings so that he would have enough energy for himself. Mm-hmm. And yet, I think he felt that it was more important to do service.
Yes, well, to me, a part of my work is service, and I feel that's one of the reasons I'm here on Earth, is to help people. And I get a great deal of satisfaction when I see definite cases where I have helped people a lot. But there again, and I think even the matter of serving is helping my spiritual growth anyway.
Have you ever gone back and done work with the police departments to help them solve crimes? I mean, since you have
I've
such a great background.
I've usually kept away from them since I left it, I'm afraid.
Well, see, it seems interesting to me. You have this background that many mediums don't have, knowing how the police forces would operate. It would seem to me that you would be the perfect candidate to go in and help them.
Well, of course, I used to see it from the other side, too. And quite frankly, most policemen are extremely skeptical of any psychics coming along to help them.
Sure. Well, times are changing, though.
Yeah, but they're still not very open to it, I can assure you of that. Because when I first began, and of course, naturally, when you do some public meetings and things, you can't keep it completely quiet. And my own superintendent got to know about it, and he was a very staunch Roman Catholic, and he says, I don't care what you do in your own life, you do not practice anything in the police station.
Right. Of course, that was when you were a policeman.
That was when I was a policeman.
Now you're safe.
But I know the attitude they used to have when these psychics used to send all these things in. Mm-hmm. Because we used to find... I don't know whether you ever knew about... We had a big serial killer in England a few years ago called the Yorkshire Ripper. And
as opposed to Jack.
As opposed to Jack. They called him that Jock the Ripper because he was similar sort of murder, but he was in the north of England, and practically every psychic around was sending in information.
Right.
Well, of course, there was about one thing out of about 99 that turned out to be right. and, of course, this is what policemen get the idea that most of it is junk.
But what about tips from people who supposedly know? I mean, it must have the same...
Yeah, well, I suppose there is, but so that's a sort of accepted thing. It's been there for years. This is new to most policemen. And policemen are pretty sceptical characters on the whole.
Sure, they're taught that way.
And they are. It took me very hard to, as I said, to accept this in the first instance, but because of my own sceptical attitude. But it's one of those things that as soon as they know a psychic's there, they usually shut the door, most detectives I know. And yet... On one occasion when I went to a seance at a friend's house, and there were six people there who I didn't know, and I sort of led the seance. And after the meeting, a guy came up and introduced himself to me, and he was a detective inspector from a police station in London. And he told me he had used psychics on a couple of occasions. And he said to me, if I really need help on anything, would you help me? And so I said, yes, okay. And... anyway, he did actually, there was some robberies going on at the Spanish Embassy in London, and he asked me to come in there and see what I could find. And I went into an area where something had recently been stolen, and I tried to pick up some vibrations. And I described a cupboard in the basement where we went to look, and the things that had been recently stolen were deposited in there. And we found that lot.
So somebody
and I said to him, I said, it's rather strange, but I said, the person who stole these, it sounds like Agatha Christie, I said, it's the butler that did it, you know. It was one of the under-butlers, in actual fact. And I did pinpoint who done it, but he still had to prove it.
Right.
You know, I mean, he couldn't go to court on my evidence, because, I mean, the judge would have left him out of court. But that's the sort of thing. Now, when I was in California 2 years ago, a man came to me. His son had been murdered in Arizona. He just graduated from college, and his girlfriend had shot him. Because he jilted her, he was going back to California, he didn't want her to come with him.
That's it. There's a lesson right there.
She shot him with his own gun.
Never tell the truth to somebody.
The boy's body was found in a deserted mine shaft in Arizona, in the wilderness somewhere down there. I don't know much about Arizona, so I can't really describe. And the father wasn't satisfied about it, because the girl had sort of admitted the murder but wouldn't incriminate anyone else, the girl sort of he wasn't satisfied, because he said the girl couldn't have moved the body that distance. And he came to me because he says the police were doing nothing, and he came to me, and I eventually contacted the son, but he says he wanted his father to leave it alone.
That's nice.
He thought it was annoying. As far as he was concerned, the girl had admitted the murder, and he didn't want it to go any further, because he says, as far as he was concerned, he wasn't feeling any revenge motive anymore. Mm. He'd been in spirit for about a year at that time. But the father kept on and on about it, and so I said, well, can you appease your father somewhere or another? Anyway... The father gave me a map, and the boy told me where the mineshaft was. The father himself didn't know this. He only knew what the police had told him. And so I pinpointed the mineshaft, and he said what route was taken to get there. And so I drew the route, as the son told me. And then I said the body was in the car for about 6 days, in the trunk of her car. But then it was moved by a truck up to this thing, and there were two men assisted her. One was a relative of hers. I'm not going to give into detail in case there's just a problem, but there were two men.
Let's be careful of this one.
I actually told the which relative it was, and also the name of another man that he said was responsible. The man took the tape to the DA and played it out, and of course he says you should have kept away from psychics, but he did admit that the route was the right route and the actual mineshaft where I marked was the right mineshaft.
So even the police felt that they should just leave
this
alone.
And they said, we know that these two are guilty, but we can't prove it. We've tried and tried, and until you can come up with some more proof, we can't do anything about it. So
it's
I don't think they've been arrested since that time. That's why I've got to be careful what I say on this.
You know, it kind of came across my mind as you were talking about this. It's possible, I guess, that certain mediums don't want to even be involved in this dark side.
I think some would do. It depends on the individual person. I mean, I don't like to dwell. I don't want to be sort of people coming consulting me on murder mysteries all the time.
Of course,
I'd hate to sort of get lumbered with that sort of thing. But I mean, this instance, the gentleman was so distraught with it, and he'd been in this bad way for quite a long time.
It's interesting that you would bring up the other side of it, because we on this side always think that everyone on the other side wants to have their crime solved.
No, they don't.
I mean, they've participated.
Quite frankly, I think if you catch a spirit, maybe just after they've been killed or just after they've gone there, they may still have revenge motive. But after a period of time, the revenge seems to disappear from them altogether. They don't have that feelings, and they don't want to sort of assist on that. If it was some of child missing, maybe they would help you, but they wouldn't help you with sort of convicting someone. It's very difficult to get an answer from them. As I say, this boy was very reluctant to give it to me, and I kept saying to him, I've got your father here, he's in a terrible state, for goodness sake, help me somewhere or another. And he did eventually, but he said nothing will come of it, it's only going to cause him more aggravation.
Right. So what we're dealing with here is an interesting situation. The person on the other side is perfectly happy, or let's not use the word happy, they feel that there's been a resolution in their life, but the person on this side doesn't see the resolution.
The thing is with it all, we all seem to place so much importance on this life when the real life is is the spirit life, and of course you can never kill a spirit. It's an impossibility.
We're kind of looking at a little chart that I kind of copied from different various informative sources, let us say. But the reason that I wanted to ask you some questions about it is it's kind of, for those of you who are listening, it's obviously you can't see this thing, so I'll explain it to you. It's a linear way of looking at the different possible levels of vibrational realities. And it's kind of numbered from 1 to 10, with 1 being basically down at the physical plane, the Earth. The reason I asked you the question about the astral is we've always heard, or at least I've always heard, that the astral is divided up into three sections, basically a higher, an intermediate, and a lower. Does that sound right to you?
Yes, yes.
Is this boring?
No.
I was like, all right, I'll just turn the thing, you know, down and we'll stop, you know, I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, I guess the kind of an entity you'd I wouldn't want to bring through if I were a medium would be someone from the lower.
No, but you see, lower astral are mostly earthbound spirits. That's what I would call them, rather than lower astral.
Earthbound
we
meaning?
We call them earthbound insofar as you do get alcoholics sometimes and drug addicts and people like that who don't want to go into the spirit world. But strangely enough, you also get people with very strong religious conviction there. People who I went to what we call the rescue circle on one occasion, which is a circle that sits there trying to get these earthbound spirits to move on.
Oh, I see. In other words, a group of people saying, "Hey, look, you guys."
And it's usually the medium and other people there giving energy and power, and you're drawing the spirits into the and trying to get them to move on. And I remember very distinctly one guy there who was a born again Christian refused to move on because Jesus Christ wasn't there to invite him across, and because his parents were there, he told me they were tempting him.
Okay.
And so it's not necessarily people who are evil out there. It can be some people with a very strong fear to move along. You know, people sometimes who dread going on, because maybe they feel that, oh, goodness, I'm going to go to a hell. They create this own purgatory for themselves. They create a hell for themselves.
So in other words, a person who is very inflexible or I hate to use the word inflexible, because I guess a lot of us will suffer from inflexibility along the way. But let's say a person who has a very strong belief system about what is supposed to happen when they die.
And if it doesn't happen, they sort of stay where they are.
Now, how long can that... Well, I guess eventually that'll wear off.
It eventually goes, because higher spirits try to draw them across.
So they could
have time, but
I was going to make a joke. I'm not going to say it, man.
You know, we do have these rescue circles that do help to do this sometimes. But I don't think necessarily everybody has to go through a rescue circle to go there. Eventually, their own relatives may, or the people that love them enough may be eventually able to persuade them to move on. But usually, they're there because they create that sort of situation for themselves.
It's very interesting.
They're not pinned to stay there. It's just that somehow or other they don't want to move away from it.
Let's talk about this.
They're frightened of what's beyond, a lot of them. They're comfortable, even though it's uncomfortable, they're comfortable with that earth situation.
So this is an important point. I mean, this means that when you pass over, I mean, you don't necessarily get a big flash over what the whole thing was about.
Not necessarily, no, not straight away. But if you...
Could take a couple hundred years, huh?
No.
Well, we've heard that earthbound spirits...
A lot depends on the... Now, although it says here suicides go, some suicides do stick around the earth for a while, just for a period of time, but they're usually the ones that are more easily persuaded to go on. And I've never had a suicide ever come back and say he was judged or condemned or anybody has sort of put any guilt onto him. They just say they're this there, and they just feel nothing but love around them to help them over. They've created karma for themselves, which they'll have to deal with in due course. But nobody will ever judge you in the spirit world. You'll judge yourself. Uh-huh. That's the difficult part about it all.
So now, of course, we hear this a lot, and a lot of people would like someone to judge them.
Oh, I know people would. It's easier.
I've said many times that there's no one worse as a judge than yourself.
Yeah, and if you want to grow, you've got to be a severe judge sometimes, too.
The intermediate astral...
Well, the intermediate and astral is, I would say, is where you find most of the people who you would know on Earth now. If they pass over, they'd go to either one or the other, depending on how far they evolve, because some people on Earth are more evolved than others.
Sure.
And it doesn't necessarily mean the more religious
person. Doesn't matter what they're wearing.
It doesn't matter. It can be the humblest of people. I mean, I've known almost atheists. When I was in the police force, I've known atheists working with down and outs in London there, who were far more spiritual than some people who get on church platforms.
All right.
But, I mean, I'm not condemning everybody on that level, but quite frankly, I found more spirituality in some people who profess not to believe in God, but they're still doing God's work in many ways. But the fact is that they may be a more evolved spirit sometimes than some people who are around preaching or maybe thinking they're good. But mostly you will find that most people that you would know will go to one of those planes.
No, the highest astral, this is generally what the...
Well, those people never come back, or never come back physically.
This is known as the Summerland, I guess, Summerland.
Once you've got that far, you've graduated all you can find out on Earth.
Okay.
With earth sort of temptations and earth knowledge, by the time you get up there, you're sort of you would be learning. You've pretty well graduated. You're on the sort of higher realms of things, and I feel that we all sort of get back to the sort of Godhead eventually.
Mental and causal planes, kind of an interesting area. This seems to be the place that Plato called or talked about. Levels which offer unlimited scope for further development of the individual mind and soul, complete brotherhood, no selfishness, inventions. This is the place where inspirational prose, poetry, art, and music are passed down to those who are receptive on Earth.
Yes, that's right.
Just kind of like, I guess,
it's just like a spirit help in other ways. It's like it comes as inspiration.
Right.
And because when I said there that a medium picks up a lot of extra helpers, anybody who is artistic or creative often picks them up too, right. who want to work in that specific line.
Okay.
I think that so there no are one's lots of occupations where you will you will get more than one person.
No one's alone.
No, I mean,
we all think of ourselves as units of society operating, you know, in our mind as our personal thing and all this, and yet probably surrounded around us are our 3, 4, maybe 15, 20
Oh, there can be lots
that are,
we can work in as part of a team with a sort of figurehead, with a front person, with a shop window again. But that's the sort of situation is that there's quite a lot of people working behind each one, and they're sort of still working with the world. It's part
so it's
of
like
their
the
evolvement.
Iceberg.
It's there for the, it is. It's like you're the tip of the iceberg, and you're working with them, and you're in sort of in tune with them. And some of the people that do work with you, they're no more evolved than you are.
Mm, good point.
You know, your everyday guide, the one that sort of watches over you, is not necessarily any more evolved than you. When it comes to teacher level, or that's a different story. But you know, all my helpers, I wouldn't say some of them. Maybe I'm not criticising them, but I don't think most of them are any more involved than I am. They're very likely just on a similar level to myself, but on this sort of life pattern, they're working on the other side with it.
Now we move up to the celestial plane. I guess this is where actually biblically referred to as the third heaven. This is where, and they say this, the gods of all religions reside.
Mm.
What do you think about that one?
Well, I think there's only one God. It depends what you mean by that.
Okay.
I mean, it's where I think all the religions will come together and will accept one another.
I think that's
yes.
what they mean by that.
And
the different
names. I feel that that is the plane where you do get some people will come back to the earth
like avatars.
As teachers, as avatars.
Okay.
Maybe even Jesus Christ was one from that plane. Mm-hmm. I don't want to upset any Christian, but that, you know,
this
or
show
Sai Baba or anything like that, so to
this
say.
This show upsets all Christians.
but you know, I feel that the big teachers in the world, the spiritual teachers, the big ones. I'm not talking about any sort of evangelist. I'm talking about the big ones, the
Mohammed.
Very important people who really change the earth, change the trend of
the
of
Buddhas,
things. The Buddhas, and maybe Muhammad, all those people all come from that level.
Right. Cherubim and seraphim. Have you ever seen the cherubim and the seraphim? We hear about these
all
the time.
All right.
Moving up to the Godhead, which is looks like the seventh plane. They refer to that as the last plane in our solar system. A comment on that at all?
Yeah, well, that's the height. That's really when we're losing a lot of our individuality there. We're more of a sort of, we're getting away from the ego. I think by the time you get to that plane, you've lost your ego.
Right, we're not.
You would get there with
right. linear.
Possibly even by the celestial plane, most of them.
I would hope so, yeah. I would hope that would be there.
But by that time, it's as though you're getting closer to the creative unit.
Of course, I always like this one. The number 8 is the end of manifest creation. How can we call that number 8 then?
I don't know that.
But what I thought
I've
was
always looked at him on the 7, but obviously you've got more than me.
Well,
but
it seems like
I don't think we know too much beyond number 7. Actually,
yeah, I agree. As a matter of fact, that's what people say. This is the height of or the end of the possible understanding that a human being can have, at least.
Well, I don't think anybody beyond that level, any spirit would ever come back to the earth as such, as a person anyway, whether they'd affect the earth in any way in thoughts or things, I don't know. But
now 9 I like, which says the pure consciousness, no thought, the void. This would be the
but then they've lost interest in
absolutely
the earth, I should think.
But 10 is the one I really like, because it says, you know, nirvana and other higher states of consciousness. So it almost indicates
it'll be a few billion years before we get there.
Only a few billion. Anyway, I thought it would be interesting to talk about that. Well, of course, now the reason was because now if you're going to bring through information, if you're going to bring through higher information, I suppose you'd like it to come from the highest astral. Would that be the place?
Yes, I think mostly where you would get it is from the highest astral, or the mental, those planes, I think you mm-hmm. can. Some of the teachers you would get communicating through you can be from 5 and 6, I think.
Now, do you bring information through from those levels, do you think?
I don't know where.
Well, no, of course I know
have,
you don't.
I have a teacher, and I don't know which level he comes from.
Not that
but he's obviously higher than anybody else that communicates through me. And he always shows himself as a holy man from India, from the subcontinent of India. And yet he tells me that I was surprised. I always thought that was his last incarnation on earth. But he told me, I did do a trance sitting in San Francisco about 4 years ago for a group that persuaded me against my will to do it, but I did it. I don't like doing trance work. And I did it, and he came through, and he sort of said the only reason he shows himself in that capacity was that he'd had another incarnation since that time where he was a carpenter in Istanbul, Constantinople, which is now Istanbul in Turkey. And he said, unfortunately, people are this way orientated that you're more likely to listen to a holy man than you are to a carpenter. And that's the reason he shows himself that way. But it's only to sort of maybe to get a bigger listening audience or to appease people's sort of imagination. Because we do seem to place a lot of importance on guides being Indians and things like that. And if somebody says you've got an Eskimo, it's a disappointment.
Right.
But, you know, everybody seems to want to know they've got an Indian brave back there or an Indian chief back there. And I always say, you know, I don't know what they'd do if an Indian knocked on their door and they asked whether they'd invite him in or not, but he's very nice to have as a guide.
Interesting point, because I guess what we all forget is that it's not, you know, it's the book. You know, the cover of the book is not necessarily what's in the book.
What's inside the book, no. As he said there, he says that when I came on my last incarnation, I was far more humble than what I was as a holy man. And he said, I feel I knew more then. Mm-hmm. But he says, people are impressed with the way it's shown, the way it's projected.
It's a very interesting point. Mm. Now, let's come back to something that you said. I'd like to perhaps investigate it, if you don't mind. You said, I don't like to trance.
Oh, I hate it.
Tell us.
Like to be in control. When I first began developing, I had a little bit of a struggle with some of my helpers, because they wanted me to do some trance work, and I didn't want to do it.
Helpers meaning?
My spirit.
So your spirit people
were... I prefer to call them helpers. Okay. I don't like this word.
No, I just wanted to make sure I knew.
In fact, my Indian holy man doesn't like the word at all.
Okay.
He always tells me that he says, if you want to call me anything, call me your friend. He says, I don't like that word guide. It sounds as though I'm going to take a trip around London somewhere, showing tourists somewhere. But and I've got into the habit, by and large, calling them helpers, our spirit helpers. I call him a friend just to keep him happy, but that's the sort of way it would do. But I've forgotten the question now.
Well, what I was asking you was you, and you said that the helpers wanted you to do some trance work.
Oh, yes, they wanted me to go in trance, but I didn't want to do it. I was very much against it at the time.
Now, why? What?
I just didn't like the feeling of losing control.
Oh, I see.
Because if you're in true trance, you're completely out of it.
Okay.
There's a lot of people.
So you only have to hear it.
There's a lot of people who do trance who are still partially there.
Okay.
And they do influence what's said.
Right. You don't need to say any more than that. In other words,
I've got to be honest with you. They do influence a lot of what is said. Their mind comes into it. I don't care who's talking through them. Their mind comes into it. But to be truly in trance, you've got to be completely out. And a lot of cases, it's not the case.
Okay.
And I never really wanted to completely go that way. And I do it on occasions, usually with my own teaching group. Sometimes I do it, because my guide usually wants to come through and explain something to them. And occasionally I do it when I'm with some friends or something like that. But it's very rare I do it. But my teacher still works through me. When I, like, preach in a spiritualist church and have to give a sermon, I always leave it to him. Because, as I was telling my friend here before I came, I usually, when I first had to preach, I'd never ever spoken in public before in my life, and everybody says, leave it to spirit, leave it to spirit. And I was scared stiff, and I kind of almost rehearsed a sermon all week to practice it. But when I got up on the platform, I forgot all about it, and just completely, and I just talked, and they sort of helped me. And since then, I've had the confidence to go with them. And he usually sort of inspires, he puts the words in my head.
So, and I'm not going to belabor this point, but that's an interesting thing that I think everyone should realize when they're discerning out there, because there are so many people who claim to be mediums and claim to be giving out information that is, quote-unquote, coming from higher sources. Let this be kind of like a little reminder that the mind can intercept at any point.
It can do a lot with it. You see, when... I mean, trans mediums have been here ever since there have been mediums on Earth, which is since man began. But of course, with this trans channeling business, as they call it, that all sort of came up of about 10 years ago or something of that nature. Because I remember when I first started to come to America, I'd never heard of a trans channeler. There wasn't such a person around, or if there were, they were very rare. But then Shirley MacLaine, of course, came on the scene, and they came out of the woodwork
with
after
Kevin,
that.
Right? Kevin Ryerson was the one.
They just came out of the woodwork after that. Yeah. There seemed to be, everywhere you went, there was more trans channelers, and I'm afraid I was rather dubious about some of them. Mm-hmm. Some of them, I say, definitely are very good mediums, but although they don't like being called mediums, I don't think. But
it's almost
some
become
of them,
a buzzword,
I'm afraid,
trans-channel.
There's more of them in it than there are spirits.
Yeah.
They get their point of view across very strongly, some of them.
Absolutely. So how would a person discern? See, that's the problem.
That's the problem. Only thing is you can do is if you listen to them enough. I always say, well, you've just got to judge on what that person would be telling you himself, what that person could speak about, if it seems any deeper or any, you know, more depth to it than what the person would normally talk like. Because I feel if spirit are going to take the trouble to come through a channel, they're going to tell you something worthwhile.
Okay.
They're not going to give you the usual platitudes that you sometimes get, that God loves you and all that. We all know God loves us, but they're not just going to give you all those sort of platitudes. They're going to give you some real cause to think about things and learn a lesson of something.
Do you do phone readings across the Atlantic?
I'm not really crazy about phone readings. I do them sometimes, but the only flaw is I don't like my phone number loose over here, because people have the habit of not checking up the time difference. And I had one woman from North Carolina. She rang me 3 times at 2 o'clock in the morning and expect me to give something spiritual to her. And I said, well, I can't think of anything, certainly nothing spiritual at this time in the morning.
So basically, what I think we've learned, and I think it's kind of interesting, we've learned a little bit about the medium side, your side of the issue, because you know those of us who are not mediums who receive this information don't think of it as coming from the higher sources. We think of it as, you know, you're saying it. I mean, my goodness, it's so hard to remember that it's not you, that it's coming from another source.
Well. A pure psychic, sometimes it is coming from your person's ghost. The better psychics, the better ones, usually are in tune with spirit, although they wouldn't like to admit it, some of them.
Okay.
And they do get a lot of help from spirit, although not necessarily from individual people that are
So you really like to make a difference between a medium and a psychic?
Oh, there's a big difference. And a lot of psychics, a lot of the mediocre psychics... And, you know, you know yourself, there are some around.
Okay.
Are purely reading the aura. They're tuning into your auric field, as we call it. And any good psychic can do that. I can do that myself quite easily. And although you don't necessarily see the aura, you can tune into it and pick up a lot about the person from it. Unfortunately, you can also pick up wishful thinking.
From the person's aura.
From the person's aura. And you can give it back as a prophecy, which will be very unlikely to come true. And that can cause disappointment. But
so this is what
it
happens.
It obviously appeases the sitter at the time, because it is wishful thinking on their part.
So this is a very important point. It's like when you go to the doctor, if you say to the doctor, I have an ache in my arm, but you don't have an ache in your arm. He'll tell you why you have an ache in the arm.
Yeah.
And then it's not true, not because the doctor was wrong, but because of the information you gave him.
And that's what a lot of the lower sort of psychics do, unfortunately, you know. They it's like I always say, when a lot of people who have some sort of intuitive ability, when you shake hands with someone you meet for the first time, you get a sort of feeling about the person. You know almost whether you can trust them or not. And it's, you're picking it from their aura, you're not from their hand. It's as though your aura's touching theirs, and you're sensing these things. And I always say to people, go on what your first impressions of anybody are, because that's usually the right thing. It's, you know, you might get misled later on.
But you can, I think that you're implying that a person can hoodwink you by implanting in their aura a lie.
Yeah, but most people don't. Most people have in their aura what they are. You know, I feel, you know, if you shake hands with someone and feel, oh, I can't trust this guy, there's something wrong here, always bear it in mind. This is how con men work. They may be very nice to you later on, and you may think, I must have been wrong, and then you lend them money and find you're in trouble. But you should bear in mind what your first feelings are of people, particularly if you are very openly intuitive, because a lot of people are.
Peter Close, great, great show. British medium right here in Southern California. We have a couple minutes. If you wanted to say something to the general public about anything that you'd like to say, what would you take this moment to tell people?
Well, I feel there are a lot of people who have psychic ability but don't use it. I think it is an important part of our lives if we part of our sort of strengths. It's another sense that we should use, and we should learn to use it, even if we don't become mediums. Or we should learn to use it, because we would be a far better person because of it. I do feel that I know lots of people are frightened of mediums. They're frightened of delving into futures. They're frightened of delving into what they call dead people. I often hear people in church-orientated people, they often say you're digging up spirits and forcing them back when they don't want to come. I've never, ever found that I've had to pull a spirit back. Usually there's crowds of them there waiting to come in when I'm ready to work. I don't know whether you saw the movie Ghost, but when Whoopi Goldberg suddenly found she had the gift, there was all that queue of spirits behind her. That's what it's like when you go to a meeting. They're jostling for positions, and they haven't become any better mannered because they've gone over there either.
So those are those that push themselves.
If they couldn't stand in line on Earth, they can't stand in line now. And you usually sometimes get a jostling and a mix-up with them. But that's the way they are. And you know, love doesn't cease just because they go to another dimension. Mm-hmm. Love is what it's all about. And if someone really loves you, they still want to help you. And I think if we try to cut them out, we're depriving them of opportunities of learning, because they can still learn from us. They can still advance and grow from what they do with us down here on Earth.
So we, just to kind of maybe really cap this, we are the ones who have made the separation between this world and that world.
Yes, certainly. Spirit don't want to separate themselves at all. It's our sort of way of thinking. And some people have the fear of it, unfortunately. To me, I've always, particularly since I've sort of opened myself up again, to me it's the most natural thing in the world. I always say to them, if you think they're dead, we're a lot deader. There's much more energy and more life when you contact the spirit world than there is on this world. And I always say that if anybody's dead that I'm dealing with, it's not them up there, right. It's these down here. But we're the ones that put the barriers up. We're the ones that have made the difficulties over the years. Because spirit will, I don't care whether you're a fundamentalist or not, spirit's going to help you. And they'll come to you. Often people dream of relatives that have gone over. And usually the relative is there. It's not a dream. It's not just their imagination working. Because spirit help us when we're asleep often. They put things into our heads. Many people will know that they go to bed with a problem and wake up with the answer.
Right.
And usually it's because spirits put it there during the night. we haven't suddenly become brilliant and sorted it all out. But you see, spirit will work with you whether you ever go near a medium or not. They're still part of our lives and they're still going to be around us.
All right.
Strange, because I had somebody came back to me the other day, and he said he'd been having, his grandmother had been hanging around his home and he couldn't understand what she was doing there. I says, well, is she worrying you? He says, no, she's not worrying me, but she's worrying the wife. I said, well, tell her to move on. Tell her she's causing inconvenience. She says, I daren't, because the kids love her. It's like a toy to them. The kids all see
her. All right.
And this is... if I push her on, the kids are going to get angry with me. So we've got to come to some compromise there.
We're out of time.